I think we're ready here. And first one on the agenda is Dave McKenna, entry number 18, OTR 75. Its department is Soil and Water. John is in the room. And Dave, you want to move it and we'll get this going?
Yeah, I'd like to move that. Thank you very much.
Okay, is there a second? Glenn? And, Dave, you want to talk about it a little bit? Comments,
questions? I'll tell you what, I'm going to ask John to step up. I had originally planned on reworking this, but at the moment I'm going to leave it as is and let John speak to it, and we'll go from there.
Okay. John Nigley, come to the microphone. Come on down.
All right. Sorry, I was in midst of another conversation over here, but do you want to come to the table? Is this on?
Right. It is.
All right, so I heard that just a general overview of what this OTR is. So the OTR is for $30,000. Basically, it's to offset a salary position, 35% of that salary position that was going towards being funded through FLOPA, Finger Lakes Lake Ontario Watershed Protection Alliance funding that came from the state. It's set aside in the governor's Environmental Protection Fund every year. Varies based on how he funds that budget. Basically, we've been funding a position at the district through that money for quite some time, probably 10, 15 years now. That money is really a great use of funds to put projects on the ground and be able to put conservation measures in place. So what I'm asking the county is to support that salary position, the 35% at $30,000 as a target request.
And John, let me, I know people have questions, but let me ask you, how would that affect the grant? In other words, if the grant was using 30 grand to pay the salary, what is that going to do to the grant coming forward?
So the grant doesn't go away. It's not something that if we don't utilize it as a staff salary that it's somehow deemed negative towards us. We just reallocate that funding towards another project or program that's on the ground implementation. We get FLOPA funding to 25 member counties in this watershed region. So it's based on a watershed rather than political boundaries. So 25 counties get the same exact cut of this funding every year.
Mark had her hand up, and Dooley.
All right, thank you. Hi, John. So this is 30,000 is 35% of a staff salary?
Yes.
So that's a big salary. Does that include fringes?
Yes.
Okay. So, okay. Can I ask what the actual salary is?
She's without fringes or with fringes?
Without fringes.
She's at 42.
Okay. And so is this an administrative person, or is this one of the people who actually does the work out there? And
this is a technician.
I don't know what that means. Is that administrative in the office?
It's managing? A field person.
It's a field person.
Yeah.
So my understanding of these grants is that that's actually what they're supposed to pay for, is the people to do it plus any supplies, whether it's, you know, hydro seeding or rocks or soil or whatever you need to actually do a project. So I thought it was that these grants are supposed to pay the staff salaries of the people on the ground.
Not necessarily. The projects, if there's a project that we want to put grant funding towards, we try to offset that with either like a seasonal salary or somebody that's, so like our hydro seeding program, we try to offset that with a seasonal position. The positions that we have currently, the FLOPA program is trying to look at projects being put on the ground, and I think it's going to get harder and harder to justify putting salary towards that fund rather than putting on-the-ground implementation projects in, paying for materials, paying for, outside contractor to do a construction job or something like that.
How many of your staff people are supported by grants?
Right now we have two staff salaries that are split, right around 75-25. Grants covering about 75.
Okay, so this would take one of those people to, 50-50? I can't do the math in my head, so.
Yeah.
Take one of those people.
60-40, something like that.
Okay, I'm really not sure I can't argue with the idea, but I'm not sure this rises to where I would put 30,000 target towards. I'm just not sure how I'm going to vote on this, so thanks.
I have Dooley and then Anna.
Thank you. Several of us just zoomed over here from the Water Resources Council meeting to make the budget meeting, and I listened to John give a good report on FLOPA there. Mm-hmm. And it's clear to me that using this money to offset staff salary will mean more of the FLOPA money can actually accomplish stuff in our county. And I am very much in favor of our adding this in support of salary for this technician. She's very good and very valuable.
Anna, Mike, and back to Martha.
So I know we deal with this a lot. I mean, from the nonprofit world that I came from, it's a struggle with grant money. They don't want it going to administrative overhead. They want it going to the actual program where they wrote the grant to. And so I appreciate that that's what you're trying to do to create that efficiency. Have you experienced, because a lot of the projects you're doing, and I remember you presenting earlier, is to try and help create resiliency, mm-hmm. For a big extent because of the climate change that we are experiencing, which we know is going to get worse. Is that part of the conversation of why you're asking for this now in preparation? Have you seen changes? How is that affecting?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think with the drought this year, being able to build in some resiliency into our ag systems, into our stormwater practices, with working with the municipalities to be able to put better resilience into their drinking water facilities in Six Mile Creek, that all plays into the discussions.
Thank you.
Yeah. Mike and then Carol.
I'm going to support this, even though it's target, makes me a little uncomfortable. But, we've been doing a lot of programming that affects the urban core. This is something that really helps businesses in the rural area and people in the rural areas. Protects water, protects our soils, is something that I think we should be very proud of, our Soil and Water Conservation Service. So I'm going to vote for this.
Carol.
Yeah, I'm going to vote for this as well, and in particular because I was really impressed to hear the progress you've made in building back that office. And while I'm glad that this didn't come to us earlier in our motions here, because I wasn't sure, were we going to have enough money to do all of what we'd like to do, I think that there is at the moment. And I think that if we're hearing from you that this is one of the things that we can help you with as your next step, as you continue to build that back and be able to bring in additional grant money in the future, I think it's worthy of doing.
I'm sorry. Anyone else? I think we're ready to vote on this. All in favor of adding 30K to the target for soil and water, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 opposed. 2. It's in the target. Thank you.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks for your work.
Thanks, John and Dave. Martha Robertson, new planning department, targeted projects to implement housing strategy.
Okay. I'll move that and ask Ed to come up and talk about it.
And Leslin, second. Go ahead, Martha.
And, I'm really conflicted here because, you know, what soil and water does is really, really important. But this housing problem is not going anywhere. And I have really, really avoided proposing any target funding. So I'm anyway. But so this is the idea here is that we're developing a housing strategy. We have a housing needs assessment that's almost complete, and we're building, really getting a clearer picture of how desperate, really desperate, the situation is. And I don't know if y'all saw the email I sent too late last night that Cornell's enrollment this year was just posted. They posted every October, and it was just posted that enrollment this year went up by another, was it 415, Ed? Another 415 students enrolled in Cornell. And so this is hurting every single person who works or lives in Tompkins County. And this is, we really have to make a commitment on this issue. So I would like to Ed come talk about how they might use $30,000 that would be put into contingencies, because the housing strategy itself is not finished. So therefore, he can't propose what he would do with it because we don't have the full picture yet. But I didn't want this budget to go by without adding something, even one time, for housing.
Anyone else want to talk about this?
Ask Ed, Ed to talk about it.
And Peter.
Martha. I read an email about this, and I thought about it, and I just have a question for you. This is a complicated issue. I mean, it sounds like from what you say that the increased student numbers up to 415 people is bad for our economy. My guess is that it's good for our economy. That,
Peter, if
no,
they had
no, I haven't finished, okay? Let's not argue. I think that it increases our economy and that it would be a mistake for Cornell to limit its number of students because of housing. So that's all I want to say.
Ed.
Here's my question, okay?
Okay, I just have to say, and, it would be a mistake. I'm not complaining that Cornell's been growing. I'm not. A lot of people do, but I'm not. I am frustrated beyond belief that they have not taken responsibility for those folks. They haven't built new beds since 2008, and they have added, offhand, I can't remember, I think that was in the email, they've added several thousand new people. So it is not a matter that I complain about Cornell. I understand and appreciate that it's growing. I think it is great for our economy. But we are so far out of balance in terms of the demand for housing, largely created by Cornell, compared to the supply of housing. And it's an equation that is terribly out of balance, and it's hurting people in so many ways. And y'all don't want to hear me rail about that anymore, but I'd like Ed to talk about how he would use a chunk of change, $30,000 one time, in response to the housing strategy. So
We have Ed and then Mike.
Yeah, I think it's important to recognize we don't have all the answers at this point. We're in the point of starting to take the results of the needs assessment and develop a strategy, and the housing summit will be part of that process. But it's clear that the problem hasn't gotten better. It's gotten worse since we did the last needs assessment. And if we want our economy to continue to grow as it's projected to, it's going to be real difficult to sustain that without more housing. So the objective really this fall is going to be to try to pinpoint the barriers to more housing. There's people that want to build housing. There's people that would like to buy housing here, but the market isn't really meeting those needs. So where are the barriers and what can we do about it? One of the obvious ones that that people are pretty aware of is that a lot of projects that are proposed get opposition in the community. And so one of the things we've been thinking about is that when we identify opportunity sites for new housing, which is a project working on right now at the Planning Department, maybe we could do some proactive engagement with the community about these sites and what type of housing would be appropriate there that people would not oppose, you know, automatically, and what issues would need to be addressed for people to feel that's a positive in their community. So that would be something where our staff would be involved, but part of that is usually a visualization of what the options might be on a particular piece of property, and funding like this could help us create those visualizations for folks. When we've done that in the past, people can get it a little bit better if they see it before there's any concrete proposal on the table, just what some of the options might be. That's one idea. There could be many others that come out of this fall's discussions and the summit discussion. But we know there are barriers out there, and we've got to be proactive, I think, in terms of trying to break down those barriers to housing development wherever we can. And having resources available to help do that would be helpful.
I have Mike and Carol Chalk, and Peter Stein has his hand up. Go ahead, Mike.
Peter has a question for Ed.
Peter, please use your microphone.
Sorry, if Peter has a question for Ed, that's fine, if he wants to go ahead.
All right, go ahead.
Ed, I don't quite understand exactly what you're going to do with the money. It's not build more housing, right? You're not going to build more housing.
No.
And does that mean that what you're going to do is you think that there's housing available which is unfilled at the moment, and that you will somehow direct people to that housing?
So no.
I don't understand what
that's
it is.
That's not it at all.
Do.
Okay. It's trying to break down the barriers we've been able to identify to the creation and building of new housing in the community. There's clearly barriers. One of the barriers is zoning in some places. One of the barriers is a review process that's overly cumbersome. Another of the barriers is neighborhood opposition to anything that's proposed. There are many barriers out there that are discouraging developers. Some of them are financial, with what the requirements are to get financing from a bank. So we know that there are a number of barriers to development of new housing. We're going to be engaging the community, including housing developers and residents, in this over the fall and into the winter, about how do we overcome those barriers and make sure we've identified the most important ones. And this funding would be used, in my mind at least, to target actions at overcoming barriers to the development of new housing. I mentioned one example of how we might, in the case of neighborhood opposition, be more proactive about dealing with opportunity sites in the community for new housing and engaging the neighborhood before there's a concrete proposal on the table and they start to get resistant. But that's just one possibility. And we would expect to come back to the legislature and explain, after the strategies developed, exactly how these funds would be used. So I'm happy with having the legislature decide later to approve actual use of the funds that are if they're put in the budget.
Mike?
Well, I wanted to thank, I mean, I agree with both what Martha said and what Peter said earlier. I want to thank Martha for making this one-time money, because I don't know how much it's going to cost. I'm expecting this to come back next year, but thank you for that. I mean, I think that's a really good starting point. You know, I want us all to kind of think, too, that, you know, I know that housing costs are high. That's not, while it sounds terrible, it will allow certain projects to get done that you may not have gotten done before. And I'm thinking of like the Bruno Schickel properties out in what is that, on 79 there? I mean, I don't know if those would have really taken off if he couldn't get the kind of rents that are there. And I'm looking at the McGuire property. People really don't seem to want that there. I think some people envision housing there. And I think the only way that that's going to ever really fly as housing is because, you know, you can get a decent rent down there. So while I know that that looks bad, some of these projects may come and happen, and then prices will come down. I think we all kind of know that, unless they keep moving more and more people in. But I understand what Peter's saying. I mean, we're in a good position in this county. I mean, there's a lot of counties you go to, and just it's horrific. It's horrific what has happened to, like, the city of Elmira, for example. So, and I was glad to hear. I mean, I plan to vote for this primarily because of what you just said. I mean, a lot of this does come down to zoning, it seems. And if Ed's going to be kind of hammering out that with the city of Ithaca and with, like, town of Lansing, we just did a lot of zoning up there. And if we can kind of get a handle on that, I think that's great. So thank you for that.
Hi, Carol Chalk.
So I guess my question has to do for Ed with whether I might have any potential conflict of interest on this.
Yes, I'm ruling that you do.
Sites?
So
I
would think not because the funds are not being allocated to anything at this point.
Well, no, I understand. You talk about specific sites, and you know, we know that affordable housing is.
But it could be any. It could be any developer. This is pre-developer even being involved in theory, and this is only in theory at this point. So.
Okay.
It's really generic at this point to the purpose of implementation of the housing strategy.
Okay. And then so then my question, Jonathan's not here to ask about whether there's he always says an appearance of conflict of interest in addition to any actual conflict of interest. So I guess I'm satisfied if everybody else is. Does anybody here think I ought to recuse myself?
Go on.
Okay.
Go on.
Well, it's important to establish. So would this be implemented by our housing planner? Whatever we did with this money would be project. I'm trying to understand which part of this is built into.
We actually don't have a housing planner.
Well,
we have a person that does many things, including housing. I'd like to have a housing planner, but we don't have a housing planner.
Okay. Well, we have a. Okay.
Yes. Just wanted to clarify
that question, and then. Then I do support this. If I don't have a conflict of interest, I support this. But I support it. The question of who should take up the slack relative to Cornell's actions is a very different question. And you know, I applaud that Cornell is now more proactively trying to bring in housing and is, you know, talking about proceeding with East Hill Village and so, you know, and steps on campus as well. So, you know, I think we are seeing some action on that front. So I do support this because I think that there's no end of need in this community on this question.
Rich.
Actually, Ed answered my question. It was regarding reserving the money and coming back to the legislature later when there was a concrete request. And with that in place, I can support this.
Thank you, Rich. Dan.
I'm going to vote against this one. I am concerned that there's no plan. I'm not sure why. You know, we have a bunch of stuff on this paper that has really good plans and that we're not voting for. So that's one reason. Another is that we do have an employee. I know you didn't call that employee housing planner, but that's what a lot of what that person does. We have somebody already in planning department working on housing. And the last point, I was really concerned about this concept of it seems like the county would be put in an advocacy position for specific housing projects, and I don't think that's what we should be doing. We don't have land use authority, and when we start talking about zoning, I'm very uncomfortable with that. I am strongly in favor of zoning. I live in a zoned community on purpose, and the thought that we're going to try to change the zoning to make it or get around the zoning, that makes me very uncomfortable. Similarly, the idea of community opposition. Community is our constituents, and if they oppose something, they have a right to oppose it. They might be very thoughtful about it. It might be a bad project for them, and there's all kinds of ways to look at projects. So individual projects, I'm not comfortable at all with the idea of the county trying to overcome community opposition for projects for private developers. I don't see where that's our role at all.
I have Martha, Mike, Anna, and now Will.
I'll pass for now.
Mike?
Good.
What?
You're good?
I pass. I'm good.
Okay. Anna?
So Dan brought up a few things that I was thinking as well that just came up when you were presenting. I am in support of this because I do believe that it's really important, and I feel safe doing it because it is one time and it is going into contingency, and it's dependent on allocation is dependent on the plan that comes forward. So I feel safe in that way. And that's why I'm absolutely in support of it, because I'm also hugely obsessed about the housing issue myself. So I appreciate how much work you do in that. And I do want to reiterate, too, that part of my support in that is not necessarily advocating for specific projects, but concepts and ideas and locations and education and outreach. Because my experience, and I think a lot of people in the legislature and the work that we're doing, and it's probably yours as well, is that a lot of times there's a lack of information and education on, you know, certain development types or locations or impact, and I think that it's really important to spend some time to do that. So if that's what you mean by the barriers, then certainly education piece would be huge, and I'm in support of it. So I look forward to seeing the proposal for sure.
Will.
Yeah, I too will support this, Dan, I hear what you're saying in terms of concerns about the county's role. What I was hearing Ed saying, though, was basically trying to get in very early and identify areas where conceivably there could be some housing where, if it was done in a certain kind of way, that there might be receptivity, whereas the pattern I have seen over and over again is, land gets sold, developer comes in, boom, you have massive community opposition. So I don't think we're overstepping the kind of things we have done in, say, other contexts, you know, the development-focused areas or whatever. I think this is very much in that spirit. And I'm not bothered by the fact that there's no yet a concrete plan. I realize that we're trying to make many pieces happen simultaneously, so I will support it.
Carol Chalk and then Dooley.
So these are questions for Ed, if you could talk to the issues that were raised, two of them, one having to do with this question of zoning. Are you talking about getting around zoning or providing information about the kinds of zoning or land use tools that have been used in communities to try to achieve better housing? That's on the zoning one. And then do you want me to ask them one at a time and answer? Or
probably.
To lay out both of them.
I'll go ahead and answer the first one. But let me explain that I think I didn't explain very well in the beginning. The effort we're going through right now is to identify potential infill sites in villages, city, urbanized area that may be suitable for housing development. It's in our comprehensive plan that we would do that. We will do that in concert with the local municipalities. So we're going to use some mapping process to identify where sites are, but then go and meet with local planning boards, local municipal boards, whomever, to see what do you think should be happening here, where do you think housing might go in your community, and what type of housing do you think would be appropriate. So that will be happening before anything else I mentioned. So it's not trying to go over the heads of, in any way, local municipalities, but it's really trying to work with them to engage the residents also in a direct kind of conversation about what would work here that you could be acceptant of and supportive of, and that could help meet a portion of our housing needs in the community, so that when a developer comes along, they're not running into a brick wall immediately, hopefully, because there's been some groundwork laid before that happens. And we might attract developers, better developers, by having done that work to lay the groundwork. So that's number one.
Well, I hope on that one that you'll consider expanding that to the kinds of tools that are used other places or maybe by some of our municipalities already to try to achieve some of the housing objectives, in addition
yes,
to
that'd be certainly
it,
be
part
of
your conversations.
Discussion.
And then on the one about trying to address the community concerns and the site selection process, again, are you talking about advocating on the behalf of particular sites, or are you talking about the kinds of things that the best practices that any developer could be engaging in like design charrettes with the community, as we've seen on some of the projects, right, that other developers may not have thought about using.
I think it could be part of some of both.
Which one?
Some of both. I mean, we are trying to identify sites. One of the big problems is where can you build the housing, where it makes sense. So we are trying to identify property that's suitable for housing, that's in accordance with local plans, and where you might have an interested landowner, and then have a discussion with the community about what could happen there. Second is it could evolve into this kind of design charrette process for a site once some kind of proposal exists. But I think what you can do is you can look at a site and say, would townhomes work here? Would apartments work here? Would dense single families work here? What would work best? What would be financially feasible? And what would the community see is most compatible with what their plans for that area are? Well, zoning is often not the final answer to a lot of these questions.
So, I would want to see a lot more thought before it comes to us about how you would work with the residents of the community.
We're kind of getting in the weeds here. Yeah. Let's move on. I have Dooley, then Martha, then Peter Stein.
So, putting money aside in this topic area makes sense to me, but I thought that we would be earmarking money in contingency and not putting one-time money in the planning department budget. Could you clarify what you're proposing?
Yeah, it is a proposal to go into contingency. I mean, it's the planning department, you know, eventually would have access to it, but it's going in contingency, like we did for the reentry plan last year.
That I could support. Thank you.
Okay.
That's where it's going. Martha Robertson, Peter Stein.
People are really... I mean, Ed's dancing pretty well here, but the whole idea is he doesn't have the information right now to develop the plan. And the work of our departments doesn't always follow the budget calendar. This is a perfect example that they've been working on the needs assessment. That's wrapping up. Now they're working on the strategy. When that's done, that will lead to a discussion with the legislature about, given all this information, what are some productive ways to make a difference here? So I asked, people had asked me, well, what would Ed use this for? So I asked Ed. So he came up with a couple of four examples, and now people are picking those apart. This is not a plan on purpose because he doesn't have all the information. And, you know, I am... you know, the sense that we can have a needs assessment in 2006 that says we have a 4,000 unit shortage of housing, and then we could do another needs assessment 10 years later that says we not only didn't deal with the 4,000, we now have a 7,100 unit deficit. And the idea that we don't put something extra into the budget to try to deal with that in some way,
you're going to talk people out of this, you know?
Okay.
Peter Stein.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting. My colleague to my left here said he's for zoning, but he's unhappy with many of the results of it. And my own feeling is that I don't like zoning. I've seen a whole lot worse things happening from zoning, not necessarily here in Tompkins County, but around the nation, where this has segregated properties throughout the nation and giving us really serious problems. It's not funny.
It is funny, Peter. I'm sorry.
I don't think so.
I think it's funny.
Okay. I guess it's funny then.
Yeah.
But I like the idea of doing this sort of thing. But I really think one should have a plan of how we're going to spend this money to do it, and a reasonable plan that we could debate without putting the money in a place where it can be gotten. I mean, we can make these decisions. We don't have to wait for a year to make a decision on something like that. And I would urge you to convince me during the year that this would be a good thing to do and that we ought to try to do something about it. So that's all. My voting against it doesn't mean that I'm against the whole idea.
I think we're ready to vote. All in favor of this $30,000 into, what is it, one time? You know, it's in a contingency fund. Raise your hand, please. Opposed. 12-2. Thank you.
Please let the record show that Dan and Peter don't like housing.
Or and one of them likes zoning, the other one doesn't.
Or that they remember Biggs.
Oh, my God.
Or that they remember
an agitator.
I'm shocked. Anyway.
Biggs property.
Number three, Martha Robertson Leslin, new set aside for development, implementation of a plan with Human Services to bring to HHS for transitional housing for homeless reentry and or recovery. Martha, you want to move it or let?
I will move it and ask you to take a look at this. So.
And I will second it.
In a second.
I'm sure after the previous discussion, I want to continue this.
If one of you wants to talk about this, maybe that'd be better.
Yeah. Annie, you had your hand up already.
I was going to second it, and I'm absolutely willing to follow up talking about
anybody
it.
Anybody want to talk about this?
Well.
Martha and Anna.
Okay. I know we're bureaucrats, but let's try to have some imagination. So.
No.
It feels like. All right. This is. We have the Human Services Coalition leads something called the Continuum of Care, have for many years, and that is a monthly meeting of providers of all the people, Catholic Charities, Tompkins Community Action, I don't even know all the people who meet every month to talk about what are the gaps, what can we do. They talk about, they sort of trade information, trade cases, and really try to make it work to find housing for people who are on the very, very lowest end of the income stream. They're always trying to do more with less. And, you know, the multi-year funding, the one-time funding that I've been pushing here is, you know, I think we have a very healthy reserve. Mm-hmm. So I think that is a way we can make meaningful things happen, and that's why I've done this, without adding to the tax levy. So this proposal is for 3 years, one-time funding for 3 years, to give the coalition a plan. This is also would go into the contingent fund set aside so that they come back to the legislature with a plan to how to spend the money. And my sense, and Kathy has put together this information for us. So I'll just ask Kathy to address this. How would the continuum of care, how would this help, is the question.
Hi. So what you see, among other things on that paper, is a lot of bed nights for people who are coming, and I think about 24% listed jail or prisons prior to going into the shelter. What you really want to do is take people when they're coming out of institutional care, coming out of jail, and put them in some supported housing, especially when people are ready to kind of make some changes. Frequently, if people have to go back, if they go to the shelter and they can't find decent housing, they just get back into the cycle again, and it just starts all over again. So,
Kathy, so the graph on here, this is the bed nights in the emergency shelter system that we have.
Well, it's the advocacy center. It's motels, shelter,
right.
and the shelters.
Right, all together. That's right.
All together. So, I mean, it's that crucial period of trying. We don't have transitional housing. We have very, very little transitional housing. And the housing that people can afford through either DSS subsidy isn't really the type of housing that would help get people back on its feet. So this could help put people in the kind of housing that they are safe in so that they can work on other aspects of their lives.
Anna and then Carol.
I'm hugely in support of this. I think that, and I appreciate this information. The reason in particular, there's multiple reasons. One, again, this is not coming out of contingency, but one of the things that I want to have all of us think about when we're considering this is that big governments are not nimble. It takes a very long time to create or address housing issues. And there are a lot of people that need transitional housing. And that transitional housing will make the difference between whether they end up back in trouble, whether it be drugs or whether it be homelessness or whether it be unemployment or whatever it is, this could make the difference. And so the idea, as I see it, is that it would allow for those small projects, whether it be renovation or whether it be the first month's rent or whatever it is, that would allow the flexibility of a large institution like a county government to be nimble, which we don't have that ability. So I really appreciate this idea of giving it to an agency that does this kind of work and would allow for this and would address a lot of the issues. And the long-term impact, I don't think we can even put a value on it. So I think it's even much bigger than the cost that this would be.
Carol, Mike, Leslie, you have your hand up?
I did.
Okay, yeah. Where?
So,
I'll put you in anywhere here.
Anna and Martha addressed some of the things. Having made Kathy sat here through our whole, what felt like much more than 3 hours somehow. Sometimes we're here much longer than that for our meetings, but that was a long 3 hours. And just the fact that we made you come back, I wanted to make sure that you had the opportunity to speak. So thank you, Martha. I'm also our liaison to the Homeless and Housing Task Force this year. And so I had the opportunity to attend meetings and hear about the unmet need in our community. And, the fact that our community, with the wealth of resources that we seem to have here, that we still have unmet need, speaks to me to just at least putting money in contingencies and seeing if we can address any of it. I'll point you to the numbers on this page that are the wait lists. It's at Catholic Charities of, 4 women per month who don't have a place to go when they need transitional housing, and the 356 unduplicated persons entering the rescue mission shelter. There's others built into to these figures. I urge us to do this, if only because Kathy sat through so many hours.
Who's next on the list?
Mike, whichever Mike it is.
Then I'll just take it.
Okay.
Either Joe or Rick, whoever's the appropriate person. This is a 3-year out of non-target. And would you explain again what happens? I realize the first year we take it out of the fund balance. What happens the next 2 years, and how do we account for that?
Well, first of all, we'll want to put a fence around that money for future years. So in the reserves, we'll need to make sure that we set money aside in reserves so that we've got the capacity to cover these until I've got a cold in the out years. In future budgets, we'll come back. So you will see, if this is a 3-year multi-year, our practice has been we will come back in each of those 3 years to give you another opportunity to take a look. So it's not a Loctite guarantee. It's simply kind of the sense of the body. And again, when Rick does his books at the end of the year, he'll put some kind of a fence around that $100,000 in this case to make sure that it's there in over the next 2 years.
Rick, is that barbed wire or electric?
It's a really big wall, giant wall.
Not a wall. Yeah.
Mexico's going to
echo there. Leslie.
I'm good, Mr. Chair. That's paid for by Mexico. Mr. Chair, you can go to the next person. Anna said most of what I was interested in saying. Let me just do this a little bit. Martha and I happened to be at a meeting today, and soon after Martha left, I was still at the meeting. One of the things that came up from a number of people sitting around the table who have struggled with housing issues, Martha was here to promote the housing summit. The question they ask is, why go to this housing summit? For those of us who struggle with finding housing or being able to keep and maintain housing, nothing's going to change, so why go? And I felt sad that people felt that way. Why waste your time to go talk with someone more about why we need housing and why as a homeless person, a mother of three children who is struggling on $9 or $8 an hour that I can't afford a place to live, why go? And in my head I thought, well, nothing is going to change. And I thought, well, you know, something might change because this body is looking to today set aside some monies to support that kind of transitional housing for people. I didn't say this to folks, but in my head I was thinking that. And it was sad for me to sit there and look at people around the table because, you know, I remember my own situation of living out of a suitcase and wishing there was a place other than shelter, somebody's couch, where I can go and actually cook a meal for my child. My mother sat in my office on Friday afternoon, and that was exactly the conversation. She said, I'm put up at a hotel, and I have three children, and I just want to be able to wash their clothes and hang it out somewhere and go in the kitchen and cook some spaghetti and meatballs, exactly what she said, and feed them. And it just felt, it was heartbreaking. So if we can do anything to help support transitional housing, it's a plan will come to us. We talked about the model of Catholic Charities, his use, a place to stay, and anything that can happen. It's chipping away at a big problem that we have in this community. No, it's not going to build, you know, a 750 apartment complex, but it might one at a time provide housing for someone in need. So I would encourage you all to please support this for that purpose.
Dooley Kiefer.
I am not as knowledgeable as the rest of you. I understand the general problem. I'm not sure how DSS is handling people who need emergency shelter. I thought that was part of their job, too. So this is another example of money towards something where there's no plan yet. I have no objection whatsoever for the Human Services Coalition and the Continuum of Care folks to try to cobble together something that would use this money wisely. But I have trouble doing it for 3 years when there's no plan. I would be much more comfortable having money set aside for the year while the plan is developed and then adding to it in a more permanent way. It's hard for me to support a plan for 3 years that doesn't exist yet. And I won't make a motion to change this at the moment, but I am torn about how to vote at the moment.
I have Dan.
Thanks. I just had some clarifying questions. So I'm hearing there's no plan, but is the idea that this money would actually be given to people to subsidize their housing month to month? No.
That's what it says. Randall.
Well, yes, if you mean given to the people lots of times. For instance, Catholic Charities rents this four-bedroom apartment. So they get a certain amount of money from DSS. That's what the state allots. And then they use money that they've gotten from other places to pay the difference so that these four women, and even they said there are people who come on and off the wait list, and, you know, but only four people can be there at a time. So it It doesn't actually go to the women. It goes to
I didn't mean that, but that's the idea of this money. It's actually going to pay somebody.
Right. It'll be paid, yes. It'll be for rent.
Not to, like, develop a plan to build a building or...
No.
Okay.
No.
And then... Okay, thank you. And then two-thirds of the way down the page, Catholic Charities, a place to stay. I'm just curious. It says net cost, $500 a month, $2,100 less $400 subsidy. I mean, the math doesn't quite add up to me, so I'm just trying to understand what that means.
So... It's the rent is $2,000 a month. Utilities are $100 a month. So the cost for is $2,100. DSS subsidy is around for each person is around $385.
Okay.
We took it up to $400, and that would be the difference about what you would need to subsidize that rent. I mean, different places could cost a different amount, but
yeah. So,
and also, not everybody comes with DSS subsidy. It's great if you do, but we still have a lot of people we have to help who, for one reason or another, whether they're sanctioned or they don't qualify, they don't get that $385 or $400 a month.
Okay, so I understand.
So that was just an example of how they're doing that transitional housing.
Okay, I understand that's just an example, and you rounded the numbers a little bit. Is it true, if I'm understanding correctly, then in that case, $500 a month takes care of four people? It's not $500 each, it's $500.
So that's the difference between the subsidy and what it costs to run it.
Now,
it would be like they needed an extra $500
yes,
just
for four
that.
People.
Four people then get the benefit
yes.
of $500. That's a good deal.
Yeah,
thank
that's
you.
A pretty good
I was
deal.
Just trying to understand the
sorry.
Math here.
Yep. Should listen more.
Hannah.
So something I wanted to add that I understand to address duly what you brought up, which I appreciate. What I understand is this is more of a gap. So case example, I have a friend whose grandson was in drug rehab. And he went to drug rehab. I'm just giving an anecdote. Went to drug rehab, came back, got housing at DSS, but the housing around that area is like a center of drug sales. So it was pretty much physically the worst place that he could have been put back in. He ended up back in drug rehab. That happened 3 times. He came back the last time and said, no, I can't be there. If I end up back there, it'll perpetuate this exact same cycle. But that's what DSS had to offer. So to not accept what DSS has to offer would mean that he's out of support from DSS. So it's for types of people where the either the location is not appropriate for them to do their work and have their children and transportation, or the circumstances of their personal situation. Whatever it is, there are people that fall through the cracks. So to me, DSS can't actually accommodate everyone that we need to accommodate. And in my mind, this is an ability to address some of those gaps. So I just wanted to say that. And for the second point is the idea of not having a plan, so not supporting multiple years. I don't see this as actually lacking a plan. It's there's so many places this money could go that it's more of we need to take a little time to figure out which ones we're going to prioritize. So in my mind, it's sort of a guarantee it's going to help somewhere because there's so much need. And it's more of where we prioritize. So if I felt that there was a risk of no success, I would say let's do 1 year. But I don't see this as having that kind of risk. So I'm happy to support the 3 year.
Martha Robertson.
Rich. So these are just a couple of examples, but something else that comes to mind, for example, DSS puts a lot of people in Groton, and then they're stuck without any transportation to jobs or services. Maybe the continuum of care is going to come back to us and say, for $1,000, we can get a van, and we have a way to have a driver, etc. I expect to see, you know, a list that says we can do this for $10,000. This is going to be $5,000. This maybe it's we're going to add money to programs that exist now, like the Catholic Charities security deposit program, where they will have, and this is the kind of thing where somebody could afford the apartment, but they can't find the extra month that the security deposit is, so they can't even get in there. Like, these are, we're talking about folks who don't have an extra $400 or $500, but they could manage the monthly. Catholic Charities has run this kind of program for a long time, and they always run out mid-year. So maybe this is another little piece of it. So I would note at the bottom of Kathy's sheet here, out of these 356 different people who go to the rescue mission in this 1 year, a quarter of them were coming out of jail or prison. I think we can add this to the list of things we tell the Commission on Corrections, that we are taking real steps. We're putting our money where our mouths are and saying we want to do concrete things that help people get back into the community and be productive citizens again.
Mike.
I want to support this. My question is, though, why, if Catholic Charities is already kind of doing something like this, why would we not just kind of give the money to Catholic Charities for them to expand the program as opposed to kind of starting a new program? Or are we not starting a new program?
We're not. This would be taking a comprehensive look with a continuum of care. And, Kathy, maybe you can tell us who's in that continuum, because I think DSS goes.
Everybody goes. There's 25 different organizations and individuals. So anybody who deals with housing or housing services is part of the continuum of care.
So
Catholic Charities has a 4 bedrooms. It's only for women without children. So it's just a very specific population that can go into that. And it doesn't, people coming out of jail, if they're women without children are coming out of jail, that's fine. But there's lots of different populations that we don't have any transitional housing for.
So I see this as the experts on the ground together saying, okay, we got $50,000 this year, $50,000 next year. What are the best ways to use that money? And it might be different the second year or the third year. And I'd like them to have that ability to plan a couple years ahead. And so,
Rich John.
I'm at the last budget meeting. I had suggested we delay this because I didn't understand it. And I appreciate everybody taking the time to have a thoughtful discussion about it. With the consideration that this really is money in reserve where we will understand a plan when we vote on it, I do support it, and I certainly understand the reasons for it. I share Dooley's concern about committing to 3 years on this. I would feel more comfortable if we funded it for a year with the idea that we should be really excited about how much good we did, and it would be an easy re-up next year. But I can support it as it is.
I'm going to make one comment. No, 3 years, $50,000 a year, I don't see it going away at the end of the third year, that it becomes a continuing program. So, that would be the only thing I would say. Now, I will support this. I will look forward to a plan and one that points out what we're going to do. But I think you have to keep in mind that you're talking about $150,000, and you're going to be talking about more later. So are we ready to vote on this? All in favor, please raise your hand. Opposed, if any? Passes.
Thank you.
Frank, your thing passed the other night, right? Okay. Okay. All right. So,
Jim, can you announce the vote? What the vote was?
It was 14-0. Did someone vote no?
Somebody voted no.
It was 14-0.
Okay. Thank you.
Oh.
You're welcome.
Let me see. Where am I? James Dennis, Martha Robertson, contingent fund. Man, we're just doing big business in a contingent fund. Reduce contingent fund target budget. Go ahead, Martha. You want to move it?
I'm happy to move that.
Yep. Is there a second? I will second it. go ahead.
In your budget, in Joe's budget, the PowerPoint on September 6th, which I put in the front of my book, Joe's Bible. So page 15, a couple days before Joe buttoned up the whole thing with staff and Kevin, and got word from the comptroller's office, which is how this happens, that our pension rate was going to be reduced to 15.3 from 15.5, and in fact, had you budgeted 16% or 15.5?
It was 15.5.
Okay, so 230,000 is the difference, which is in fact a real number that we're gonna be charged 230 less for our pensions than is in Joe's current budget. So I want to recognize this, and that's target money that we could bring off the levy.
Anyone else? Mike.
I just want to say I like this idea. I think it's right to return that money to the taxpayers. I think it's great. And I'm very thankful to the state that they're apparently one of the few states that are doing this. So I find that remarkable. So.
Mike Klein.
Joe, I'd like to know how you're feeling about this and whether you think that this is volatile in such a way that we are taking a risk by doing this.
Well, you know me. I'd like to have $3-4 million in that account because there are always risks in budgets. At the same time, this really was, Martha described it well and more concisely than I probably will, this really was a last-minute savings that came our way. It was the Friday before the budget came to you. And so we moved that savings over to the contingency account, which we had set at a level originally that we felt comfortable with. We thought that 977, which is what you will have left after we do this, would be adequate to cover our risks, acknowledging that there can always be things that can happen to you. So I'm feeling fine about this. I think this is an appropriate amendment to make.
Anyone else? All in favor of this amendment, please raise your hand. Opposed, if any? One opposed? 13 to 1.
Yay.
What?
Who voted no?
Julie. Julie, do you want to?
No, I voted no. I had my hand raised because I wanted to make a motion before you got to this.
Well, do you want to do it or no?
Not on this. I have a separate motion I wanted to bring to change the budget.
All right, well, we have one more, and then we'll entertain other motions. Emergency response. Lee is here. This was a bill the administrative assistant position back to full time, and Lee is here to talk about that. I remember the discussion during the budget, and hopefully some of you have also. So I would move this. Is there a second? Glenn seconds it. Discussion. People. Carol, Lee, you want to come to the microphone back there, please?
Yeah, so my question was for Lee. So I recall you're saying something about this the first time around, about the fact that we're expecting a retirement. Do we have any kind of notice that this person is retiring in 2017?
They've indicated to the end of this year was where they wanted to work to.
The end of 2016.
Correct.
So.
Thereabout. Yes.
So they've handed in notice, or they?
Not officially.
Not officially.
We're planning for it.
Okay. So what did you say to us? So this was the pending retirement of this person. We have a half-time person doing.
It's a little more than half-time.
Do you need a full-time?
Yes, I'd like to see it restored back to full-time. For the past 2 or 3 years, this person has worked reduced hours as they've been moving toward retirement. And the employee's been with us for close to 45 years. No. And it's simply an effort on the department's behalf to reestablish the organizational capacity that traditionally was there.
I'm not sure that I support this because I don't support this because if we've been managing to do the work on half time, it seems to me that a younger person, somebody should be able to come in and
Younger is the wrong word.
Make sure you don't hire any old people.
Yeah. Well, it's presumably somebody who is not retiring able to come and do this. I misspoke. Sorry, I will pull. I will retract that. Somebody who is not retiring should also be able to do this. If we've been able to do it with halftime, that we should be able to continue to do it with halftime.
Lee, why don't you just give us a description of what's going on here?
I think.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'll keep it brief because I did speak on it at the presentation. But I would just say that, again, it's to restore some capacity that I think is needed in the office. I would tell you that as a department, it's a $3.7 million a year operation, 24-hour-a-day operation, dynamic environment, 30 employees. But probably more critical to me is, and what makes it demanding, is that we've got a half a dozen program areas where we're interacting with 40-some agencies, public safety agencies, on a daily basis. And even on a good day for me, Carol, it's hard to keep it all straight. The person that's retiring has been with us for 45 years, or close to that, and with his retirement, I'm going to lose a lot of experience, knowledge, and intuitive know-how in how to manage the day-to-day operations. I think you're better served if your director can go back to directing and be able to have that capability to have other people help manage the day-to-day operations. That's what I'm asking for.
Rich.
Are there salary savings that will occur at the retirement? Are there salary savings that will occur at the retirement?
I've budgeted for it based on the current classification of an administrative assistant at that top level. I haven't looked at whether that is something that could be reclassified.
But is the person who's retiring in this position or some other position?
No, in this position.
Okay.
Anyone else? Dooley, Martha.
Lee, I think I remember you saying that although this position has been authorized at full time, it's been funded at half time for a while.
24 hours rather than 40 hours.
So you want to make it back to 40 after this retirement?
That's correct. Okay. Reduced those lines to meet target in previous years.
Yes, thank you. That's what I recalled.
Martha, go ahead.
So does that cover the fringe too?
Yes, it does.
Oh, actually, if they're 24 hours, we've already got their fringe. We're paying their fringe, right?
It's 18 plus 9, roughly. It's the same fringe benefit rate for the additional amount of salary.
Okay. I'm going to guess, is it also a matter that you think there's can be a real difference in the pool of people, the talent pool of folks who want to go for a full-time versus a half-time job? I mean, is that...
I think it would be difficult to fill it with a person that's going to stay for a long period of time if you're only going to offer 20-some hours a week.
Okay. I mean, I made my pitch about target money before, but I'm going to support this.
Anyone else? Joe, what is the current fringe rate? 41%?
It's almost 50. It's 49.3.
42.
Okay. Any other? Wow, that's amazing. When we came on, when I came on here, it was like below 40. Yeah. So, any other comments or questions about this? All in favor, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Opposed. 13-1. Peter Stein, you supported it, right?
Yes.
Okay, 13-1. So what is that? And Julie, you have one more amendment, and then I want to talk a little bit about the levy and where we may go with that. Julie?
Yes, I want to revisit what had been OTR 25. Which was funding the technology librarian at the library as a full-time position. Tonight, most of the discussion has been about how we're going to have money put aside while plans are developed, while we figure out how to spend the money. And this is a position where it's well known that it's needed and how the person will be used. And we have been loath to restore positions to this library, which is busier than ever and needs them and has been cut and not restored since 2008. So I'd like to move revisiting OTR 62 to have a full-time technical librarian.
Is there a second for that, Dan? Discussion. We'll go right down the row here. Martha, Anna, Mike. Or Martha, Carol, Mike. I'm sorry. Okay. Sorry, Anna, Martha, Carol, Anna, Mike.
Okay.
Go. Martha?
Julie, the issue of one-time versus target is a whole nother smoke. If this were a one-time thing, I would vote for it. You know, we've put a lot of new money into the library, and I know it's never enough, so I have supported this or voted for this at the halftime level, but I'm not going to go any farther. So not this year, maybe next year.
Down the row, Carol?
Well, I definitely support getting this position back up to the full time. They've asked for this for 5 years. I'm not sure whether I think we ought to be doing that now when Susan's not here, where we haven't heard any additional information since we've done it twice as part of this process, or whether I think we ought to do it after having a chance to hear any new information at the floor of the legislature.
Carol, how
not sure yet.
Could we do a vote and then we'll see where it goes at some point? And Anna, you were next? Or Mike? Oh, go ahead.
I agree with Martha's comments. I would also underline the fact that we are putting money in besides this for the closure of the structural deficit. And if you think about it, the fact that we have closed the structural deficit without saying to the library, lay people off, that's the other way you can close a structural deficit, is a large support for probably the best-funded library in this upstate New York.
Yeah, I'm going to not support Dooley's move. I think the halftime position will be very interesting for them to put in place moving forward to see how a librarian, they get a hold of a librarian who has those kind of tech skills. I remember back in the day when I was an elementary school teacher and we had a librarian at our school, and that librarian was kind of old school librarian, lovely person, but old school in the sense that the way she wanted the children to treat the books was like she had to pay for the books, if you know what I mean. It was paid for with taxpayer money. We ended up with another librarian who came in after retirement. That person was much more tech savvy and literally changed the whole feeling in the library. So I think, as Susan said here, we have many people who use our library, use our computer system, and I think it'll be a big advantage to have a halftime. If they come back next year and want more, I think we have to consider that at that point. Dooley.
I think there's a misunderstanding about this position. It's not that the librarians don't know technology. It's that the public who comes in needs help. And the way people need to apply for jobs, needs to have skills to get hired, they have to understand the changing technology. And the librarians assist our residents in becoming more technologically savvy. It's not the librarians who need to become savvy.
Well,
they are.
I'm not going to argue at that point with you. You're probably right. But anyone else? I think we're ready to vote on this. All in favor of Dooley's amendment to go to full-time, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Opposed? 9 opposed, and 5-9 is the vote. Anyone else have any amendments? We are now at 3.14. We started this budget at 3.0 that Joe gave us 2 months ago. And I want to ask him being Joe, about our sales tax numbers. And I'm looking in my mind that I would love to be able to get this number down to somewhere a shade under 3.3 in the 2.9, 2.95 range. And I'm going to ask the county administrator what his thoughts are about where we are in the sales tax right now and if we can possibly do that. Joe.
So you're going to put me on the spot.
It is. A little bit.
Well, Thursday late afternoon, we got the third quarter numbers in from the state. And since that time, we've been passing what passes for projecting sales tax these days. And I say that because what used to be a science is now an art. There's such volatility in these sales tax numbers. I wish I could tell you there's a nice linear projection that you can do, and you can't. You just can't do it. That said, the third quarter came in 1.3% above our share of it, the third quarter of the year before, which means that we're still lagging last year, year to date, by 0.3%. We're still falling short of where we need to be to hit the 2016 budget target. But with all that negativity, we also that's a bit better than what I had projected when we built this budget. So if you look at what happened in the last quarter, I could probably tell you that there's a little room without creating a tremendous vulnerability for the county. I will tell you, though, that it is so volatile still. It's a pretty risky proposition to be moving it around too much. I mean, Rick and I had a conversation. We should have been home with our families on Saturday about what the risks are as we're entering 2017 to go well beyond what's happening in Tompkins County and really talk about the general economy and what may happen there. So it is a risk-filled environment. That said, again, the picture is a bit brighter than it was a few months ago when we first brought the budget to you. So if the legislature's goal is to get this budget to under 3%, then I think it's a reasonable conversation to have about do you want to put some sales tax money in to make that happen. I think that's really – I need to be the cautious one in the room, but I think it's an appropriate conversation to have.
I mean, it's somewhere around 110,000, I think.
So 100,000 would get you below. 100,000 would get you in the low, probably 2.9, 2.91, something like that range.
Martha.
So if Kevin could do that up there, that'd be great. And so I understand it's not like we're putting money in; it's that we're changing a number on the overall summary.
Revenue.
So you look at your fiscal summary page, the first page, towards the bottom, under net local, it's section 2, page 1, sales tax and unallocated revenue, right?
That's right. So your revenue would go up.
What you're saying is, and this is always an estimate based on past history, so what you're saying is that instead of 2017 being 35,302,000, we would put 35,402,000 there. If you're saying 100,000.
Kind of, although you really want to go to the unallocated revenue page, which is.
Kevin, what? Can you just show us quickly? Oh, you just did it. What? 100?
Yep.
Or 110?
What page, Joe?
If you go to
Mike, do you want to say something?
Page 24.
Every year at this time we start talking about sales tax. It always makes me queasy.
Right.
Even by applying that amount of money, we are still above the cap. I want to point that out to folks.
Right.
Cap is at 2.2. Right. Applying 100,000 would bring it to 2.93%. What would $75,000 do?
Could we just find out what page we're on?
Yes. Go to page. If you go to page 20, you'll see the net sales tax amount
Thank you.
That we budget.
Thank you.
2-20?
Correct.
So, Kevin, 75, 298, 2.98. Right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I applied the 75 that Mike suggested.
Yeah. All right.
Which line is that, Joe? Oh, is that the 3%?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's 31,579,372. Mm-hmm. That's the number we would adjust.
No, it's 2.98.
Carol.
Maybe other people want to see the other figure. I don't know.
Right now, I was suggesting 100. Mike just put a 75 in. But Carol, go ahead.
So I don't feel as big a need as others to get us below an arbitrary rate, whether it be the 3% that we asked the administrator to start us out with, or whether it be the 2.2% that the governor set. So I don't know if I support this. Joe, can you tell me, so what's the impact potentially, if any, on the target for next year when we go to do this, of taking either of these measures?
It would not affect target. These are local dollars, so it would not affect target.
It wouldn't start us out any worse off next year than we would otherwise be.
No, I mean, if we fell short, if we've overshot the mark in sales tax, it means that you would have to offset that with an increase in property taxes. That's really the risk of overshooting the mark on sales tax. And frankly, that's one of the stories of the 2017 budget, that in 2016 we overestimated how much we'd get from the sales tax. So we had to offset that with property taxes.
Yes.
So that's your risk.
So we'll see an impact next year when we start talking about this,
if we've overshot the mark.
Overshot it. So I don't feel a need now to set an arbitrary number or meet an arbitrary number that we set.
Before, I have not made a motion, mm-hmm. I don't believe, yet. So I want to move an amendment to add $100,000 to the sales tax number and reduce the levy to that's 75, 293, right? On 100, is there a second to that? Rich seconds. Discussion now. Round the table. Dan, Mike, Dooley, go ahead.
I just tried to do some quick math, and I'm hoping somebody can check me or whatever. It looks to me like we're adjusting the amount we expect to get from sales tax in 2017 by 0.3%. Does that sound right? Among people? Okay. That's helpful to me to know what I mean, that's a very small percent we're taking a bet on. You know.
Sounds right, but I'll do it right now.
Okay, thank you. So that's just helpful to me to know what the difference is.
Come around. Dooley, and then Mike, and then we'll come around this way. Dooley?
I think we all are tempted too much by using percentages. And percentages can be really misleading. What our constituents care about are the actual dollar amounts. And we're playing so much around the margin. It's embarrassing to me that that's what we're doing. It's so easy to talk in terms of percentages. And what matters are the actual dollars, and the actual dollars are minuscule.
Mike?
I mean, I guess I don't mind doing this. I just don't really understand how we do it. And number two, it seems to me if we can't hit the 2.2, it doesn't matter if we hit it. I mean, it's kind of like miss by an inch, miss by a mile. It's, you know, I guess I'm not really understanding the point or kind of how we do it either. How are we kind of guessing at something that's going to be higher when we're not sure it's going to be higher? You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, essentially that's what we're doing, rolling dice and seeing it. Mike Lane?
Move to amend to 75.
Is there a second for Mike's amendment to 75? Dooley? Discussion on moving it to 75. Martha?
Do you have the percentage, Joe?
Dan was right. It's about 0.3%
0.3%
adjustment on the sales tax.
Okay, so it's a refinement of the sales tax estimate. There are a whole bunch of assumptions that go into any budget, you know, and this is one of the assumptions is sales tax. No, this is just a minor refinement, and I think it's a totally responsible thing to do. If you look at our fund balance, go to pages 24 and 25. Joe, did you said like if we were to fall short? I mean, like the fund balance is the insurance policy, right? I mean, we ain't going broke, not by a long shot. I mean, if I understand, after the 2017 applications, this is in your budget, and there may be, since we've allocated one-time money, on page 24, that 26.5 will go down, right? Maybe that's up there, Kevin, but. So our target fund balance, by policy, our target is about 15.8 million. So when we've got a fund balance, even after spending this and changing the sales tax, if our fund balance is 26 or 25 and a half, we got an extra 10 million here. And we're in really fine shape.
Down the row. Anyone else? Rich?
I feel comfortable at either the 75 or the 100. My sense is that the fuel costs are going to go up in 2017. I think we're going to see increased revenue from that sad event.
Anyone else down the side? Carol?
So if the 100 is 78 cents on the county tax bill on a median-priced home, then this $25,000 difference is how much? Do somebody do the math for me? 20 cents we're talking about? This is ridiculous.
Thank you for your support. Anyone else? Down this way, Ann and Mike.
I tend to agree with Julie and Carol. I do think we're arguing pennies. But at the same time, I'm happy to support what people want. My tendency would be towards the 75. If the majority want 100, I would do it. And the only reason I'm saying that is some people look at the percentage in the community, and that's really important to them. Some people look at the absolute number. If it makes everyone happy here and feel comfortable, I just want to remember that we are arguing pennies. That's for me.
Mike, and then we'll go back to Dan.
Gas may go up, but car sales are really doing lousy. So they're big ticket items. I'm not sorry we're talking about pennies.
Thank you.
You know, pennies make a difference to a lot of people who don't have a lot of money.
Thank you.
And we need to think about them. And if we're spinning a dime on its end, that's okay. This is when we're supposed to be doing those things.
Leslin, Dan, Anna.
Michael said exactly what I was going to say. I don't want us to come across as elitist bunch of pennies don't matter. Pennies matter to a lot of people in this community, so please, let's not characterize it that way.
Okay.
Carol, if you want to propose something higher, I'll take $300,000 if you think that would make the bigger difference. But it's not 20 cents means a lot to a lot of people.
Well, I fully understand that. They do, but we're talking about a $48 million budget.
And so propose something higher.
So I don't think we ought to do this at all.
Okay. Well, that's pretty clear. Dan.
I'm a little bit of a nerd about this particular topic, so I'm just going to spend a second to say percents and what the difference is to me. And then if you don't understand me, it doesn't matter. When it comes to the dollar figure that the tax bill is on an average home, then it's really important to say it in dollars because that's what it means, 20 cents or $22, whatever we're at right now, $16. But when you're changing the tax rate, when you talk about sales tax, percent is really important because that shows how close your prediction is. So I'm supporting me to be consistent, but that's why I have use those two different figures in those two different ways. That's all.
Back to you, Anna.
I really appreciate, Mike, what you're saying and Leslin, what you're saying. I guess for me, the reason that it gets to a point where I'm, you know, it feels very gray is because of what Joe was saying, and I,
and I'm trying to figure out how do we estimate something, get as accurate as possible so that we are as honest and clear to the community next year when this happens. And given how volatile everything is, given that we don't know when we're trying to predict, it does, as a statistician at heart, we're working with numbers that we can't predict. So that's where my feeling comes from when I say it's this small amounts, because the random error around what we're trying to estimate is really big. That's all I'm saying.
Let me just say this. The county administrator, for the number of years he's been here, have been pretty accurate when it comes to sales tax as we move forward. So is there anyone else who wants to say something? I think we're ready. Oh, Dooley? You've already made me feel bad. Are you going to do it some more?
I thought you were praising the county administrator's leadership in the past. I did not get a resounding feeling that he thought this was a good idea to cut the sales tax.
I understand that. I understand that. So, you know, please, I do listen, all right? Resolution, the amendment is to use $75,000. All in favor of that, please raise your hand. To the sales tax? One, two.
Can you repeat that? I'm sorry.
The amendment. I'm sorry?
You said on the amendment.
The amendment. We're voting on the $75,000 Mike's
from
amendment.
From 100 to 75.
All in favor of Mike's amendment 75, please raise your hand. One, two, three, four, five. Opposed? Everyone else. So we're back to my $100,000 amendment. Are we ready to vote on that? All in favor of the $100,000 amendment, please raise your hand. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine. Opposed? One, two, three, four, five. It passes 9-5. So we've added. We're going to roll a dice and hope we get $100,000 more. Now, Mike.
Ready for motion on the budget?
We are. We are.
I'd like to move it.
Anna, second. Okay, let's fill in the numbers. You all have it on your desk. The resolve for a total tax levy amount of $48,029,942. Am I right there? Okay, and that goes in the first blank. Resulting in an approximate tax levy increase of 2.93% and a countywide tax rate of $6.62 per thou, a decrease of
1 cent.
1 cent.
Where's the levy increase? Or where's the rate? 662.
The rate is there. Proposed 2016 budget was $6.73, right, rate? And the rate is now $6.62. So that's 11 cents. Everyone?
Wait, can you go over that again?
I'm sorry?
Can you just read all that again?
Well, it's 48,029. Look at your resolution. They're blanks. 48,029,29,942. That's the levy. The tax rate is $6.62, down from 673, and the levy increase in the 2017 budget will be 2.93%.
That's a decrease of. Did you skip a blank there?
What is the percentage decrease, Jim?
0.07. Is
yeah,
right?
Point.
Levy increase versus 2016. Go across the line.
Yeah.
So if you round it off, it's 0%.
Or 1.
The levy increase of 2.93 and a countywide tax rate of $6.62 per thousand, a decrease of?
0.07.
Right?
And what was that about 662 versus 662?
Well, that's a tax rate.
No, I don't know, but what was that about 663? It's where pennies are so, you know, make a difference. What? It's 660.
The proposed budget was 673. Ours is 662.
And it's a decrease of 0.78 on a median-priced home assessed at 175, right?
Right, yes. That's it.
Thank you.
And what we're doing now is recommending a tentative budget to be voted on tomorrow evening.
Can we go through? I'm sorry. Can we go through those numbers one more time? Can you read those off to me again, just so I can?
I have the amended budget levied at $48,029,942. I have a tax rate of $6.62.
Now, the change column is the change from what was recommended, not from 2016 to 2017.
Right.
So as you said earlier, that's an 11-cent reduction.
That's wrong. One cent. Right?
No.
No, you recommended
the 2016 budget column.
It's 11 cents.
So the new 2017 budget, as you've recommended, will have a tax rate that's 11 cents less than in the 2016 budget.
Right. But you recommended $6.63.
That's correct.
Okay. So it went down one penny.
From the recommended budget. Okay.
Will.
Jim, as we move into the next step, can you remind us all what it means if we vote tonight and then vote tomorrow, and then what's the default position as a result of that?
I believe if we vote tomorrow in the positive, that's the budget that we send to the public hearing. And as I said to the other evening, any time during this process, obviously we would accept amendments, and whatever the ledge wants to do, they could do over that time. So I believe I'm correct in saying we support it tomorrow. We support it tonight. We support it tomorrow. That's what goes to the public hearing. And one thing I wanted to bring up to you, there's been some talk about changing the date of the public hearing. And what was the date we came up with, Kathy, that might work? The 9th?
It was either November 2nd or November 9th.
Yeah, the day after the election.
Are we allowed to speak about that tonight, or is that for tomorrow night?
We've got a motion on the floor.
Yeah, but that's a side conversation.
Well, no, I'd like to understand. So is this, we're talking about the public hearing on a separate night than the...
Stop. Forget that I said that. We have a public hearing set on the night before the election. And there's been some discussion that people didn't want to do that. I wanted to move it to the night of the election, but no one wanted to buy that. So we tried to go either later or earlier. And I'm making this up here. All right? So right now we're scheduled for the night before the election. Please vote on the tentative budget.
Point of order, though.
Yes.
Don't we have to give 30 days notice for that?
We have to give notice? Oh, yeah, but how many days, Kathy?
Not 30. I just need time to get a legal notice in the newspaper.
Yeah. Martha.
I have a question. So Joe just reminded me the change column is change from Joe's recommended.
Right.
So what's the in the paragraph here, it's resulting in an approximate tax levy increase of 2.93%.
Right.
And is that actually a decrease of 0.7, or is that 0.7 the change from Joe's?
That's the change from mine.
Change from Joe's.
Well, then we need the change from 2016. Don't we?
11 cents.
That's
what?
11.
No, percent. Percent.
Oh. What's the percent decrease?
I mean, that...
A decrease of something percent.
So I think we're okay. Now, that's what I wanted to check again, Martha. Yeah. I think the way it reads now, it's the total tax levy. And there it is, the 48. Yeah. It's a levy increase of 2.93%. That's correct. So that's not a variance from the recommended. That's up from last year.
Right.
A tax rate of, and there it is, the 662. And that's a decrease of whatever...
One penny on yours, on the recommended.
But that's the number that we need to calculate, because that's
very close.
We haven't done that.
Okay.
There's only one.
But is it still a decrease of 78 cents on the house? Or I'm now really confused.
No, no, it's not a decrease of 78 cents. It's an increase.
15.64.
Yeah.
59.
A little less
increase
than $16.
Increase from 2016 of $15.64.
Yeah, $15.64 is right up there.
It's an increase 15.64. Of 15.64.
Correct.
On a median priced home?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Now, what we need to do for you right now is to figure out the percentage decrease in the property tax rate.
Yes. Okay.
All right. Can we do that?
We'll see if Kevin can get there before me.
Okay. Kevin?
I think it's about a, I think it's negative 0.11%.
On the, wait, what is that figure?
On the we're talking about the change in the rate.
Okay, Anna, go ahead.
So I understand everything here. The only thing that in this resolution, a decrease of whatever, so you're saying 0.11%, can we add to this on property tax rate, just to make it really clear, from 2016? Can we just add that to the amendment so that it's much more clear?
No.
Why?
Because we're talking about the 2017 budget.
Correct. And we have a statement here that says a decrease of something. And when you're stating a decrease in something, you should say what that something is from what. So if we want to be really clear in this amendment, and it's a public amendment, it's a decrease on the property tax rate from 2016. That would be really clear.
It's there.
Where
it
am I?
It precedes it.
Beginning of the paragraph.
Well, I think we can fill in the tax rate decrease gap now. Kevin and I both have the same number. The tax rate is declining by 1.53%, call it 1.5%, from the 2016 tax rate. So that finishes that paragraph. And again, you've got the $15.64, and that's on a home assessed at $175,000.
So, Anna, the reason why we can't do it is because this is 2017. It's not the resolution only has to do with 2017, not 2016.
All right. The 1.53 was what I was looking for anyway. But if we can't put it, that's fine.
That's the last blank is what you're saying? That's the percent?
That's the decrease? Percent decrease.
Yeah.
1.5.
That's the decrease in the rate, the tax rate.
All right. We know. Mike?
I just want to say it's interesting to look at the tax rate, but pay attention to the levy. That's right. What's going to affect the tax bills, and we're above the tax cap. Let's not go into the town of Ithaca town, and the other towns and the city in running around saying that their tax rate is going down when their levy is going up and costing the people more money. Let's be honest. We went away from that more than a decade ago, and I would hope that we just continue to focus on the levy.
Yeah.
Anyone else before we vote here? Carol?
Yeah, so this is what I was trying to talk about, where the 20 cents was relatively a minor thing, because we are still talking about $15.64 difference in on a median change in value. So I just wanted to clarify that. And looking down through the list to decide whether to spare you all this tomorrow night or not as we pass this, but looking down through the list at the size of the changes that we made, 14,000, 4,000, 10,000, I mean, even where we did 30,000, compared to the base assumptions that we use in our budget, where we're talking about 0.5% per year over 20 years if increasing the capital fund. It's just there are huge assumptions built in here that we never address through the
current process we've got.
And you could be right.
If we can in future years figure out a way to get at some of these more base assumptions, we've tried it with program, you know, going through the program-based budgeting exercise. If we can do something like that again in the future, that would be
great. Mike.
I just wanted to be quick about something. I mean, I appreciate what Mike is saying about the tax levy. I just want to mention that really the time to do that is when we did this, like literally 6 months ago, when we set what our target is. So if people are really thinking that that tax levy is what we've got to be kind of honing in on, that's the time to do that. I mean, it's kind of hard now to say, okay, we shot for 3 and now we're below 3 and, well, darn. So if we want to have that policy discussion over the course of this next year after we get this through, you know, I think I'm open to that. I'm like, let's talk about that because that would be
about,
a great
idea. About, I'm talking about our language talking about levy versus rate.
Okay, but I think that you don't – I mean, it's fine talking about language, but if it's something we really are saying that this is important to us, then that's the discussion we should have. Like
6 months ago.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. If we're going to try to do that, then
well,
that's
we had that discussion.
Yeah, and I know I lost.
Martha, I'll give you the last word.
Yeah, I don't want to drag this out, but the point is different people look at different numbers, and I think it's important to have them all in there.
Are we ready to vote on this? This budget, tentative budget, up there on the screen. All in favor, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 opposed. What? Nobody's opposed?
Some people like reluctantly went like this after you went
opposed.
Voting
who's
rate
opposed?
Went down.
Well, Julie can.
So, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Do I have 12 plus 12 and a couple of people are going to call me?
You know, three-quarter.
Is that what we're doing? Okay. All right.
What is the vote? What is the vote?
We will have a tentative budget that has these numbers in it tomorrow. Rich.
What is the vote?
I guess it's 14 zip.
Okay. It's important we make that
what
clear.
What are we doing about the public hearing? Did we decide on a date? Because this resolution calls for a date.
Jim.
What?
Do you want to just call the vote again?
Yeah.
Let's do a roll call.
One more time.
Roll call.
Roll call. Martha Robertson.
Yep.
Rich John.
Yes.
Carol Chalk.
Yes.
Will Burbank.
Yeah.
Leslin. Leslin. I'll get back to you. No. Yeah, okay. Glenn Morey.
Yes.
Anna Kellis.
Yes.
Mike Lane.
Yes.
Kevin McGuire. No, I'm sorry. Mike Ziegler.
Yes.
Dave.
Maybe.
Maybe. And Dan.
Yes.
Peter Stein.
Yes. I'm sorry.
Yes. Julie Kiefer.
Yes. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Are we going to be held to these votes tomorrow night?
No.
No.
We're not.
Let me ask you, do we want to talk for 1 minute about setting the public hearing date,
yes,
or do we do that?
Yes.
Yes. Martha.
I'd rather go with November 2nd. What night of the week was that again? Was that Wednesday?
Why are we considering changing? Can we start with that?
What are the dates?
No, wait. The public hearing is on scheduled for the day before the election.
It's scheduled for 2 months. I'm wondering why we're suddenly changing it.
Well, somebody realized that the election was November 8th.
I'm asking, what is the reason we have to change the date? Somebody must have come up.
Right. Well, if this is a meeting, if this is a public hearing, we want the public to come. I'm pretty sure they're going to be distracted the night before the election. I will be. So I think November 2nd is a month. We have time. We have time to get it out there. I really think it's not very user-friendly to do this the night before a presidential election.
Can I suggest 5:30 as the time rather than 7?
Some of us have a committee meeting. Does that work?
Yes, that works.
Okay. You may not suggest that. I think 7 is really...
I'm sorry? Is that a resounding no? 5:30?
That's my resounding.
Okay.
7 o'clock?
All right, 7. All right. How many people think 7, no, November 2nd at 7? Just a straw poll here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Okay, November 2nd at 7.
Well, wait, so the resolution
for the people who can't do it.
We will amend the resolution tomorrow.
Wait. Are there people who absolutely can't do it then? Because, like, depending on what date you were picking, I've made plans.
Yeah, it's been on our calendar for 2 months. I'm not sure why it suddenly is coming.
No, I do understand the rationale. I just wanted to make sure that there's not somebody who literally...
We might want to think about a different date.
All right.
Sitting here and I'm thinking.
Okay.
I do believe that that is actually the city budget vote as
well.
Oh,
yeah.
City of Ithaca budget vote.
All right. Right now it's set for the November 7th, okay? And let's stop talking about it.
This is actually on the agenda tomorrow night, so I would ask that people check November 3rd as the next, the Thursday that week, and see if they can do that.
So that's the Cooperative Extension Board meeting, which I've missed the past two, and if it were, like, later, I could do it. If like 7:30 or something, it would be fine, but... if we did 5:30.
All right.
7:30.
So
what date are we talking about at this moment?
The third.
November 3rd.
Jim, can I just ask a question? Why aren't we going to do it on the first, the ledge meeting, prior to the ledge meeting?
Start the legislature meeting with that.
You go on with your bad self, Dave.
Traditionally, we've always had it a separate event.
And no one shows up.
But we don't have to.
I like that idea.
We all got to be here anyway, so it just makes more sense to me.
November 1st?
You are forgiven for not bringing me dinner.
Attaboy, Dave. Thank you.
All right.
All right, November 1st. We'll make the changes tomorrow.
November what? November 1st?
First.
At the beginning of our meeting.
No. 5:30.
Not 5:30.
5:30.
Okay. I think we're done here.